Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Conversations with Cynthia Hyatt, professional psychotherapist and relationship expert. In private practice for over 20 years, Cynthia specializes in teaching individuals, groups, and organizations about how to be successful in relationships, how to handle the variety of differences each gender brings, and ultimately, how to be your own best version. With a dynamic and enthusiastic approach, Cynthia helps each person understand how temperament and gender affects every relationship and inspires her audiences to become all God created them to be. With this understanding, she shares practical tools, resources, and wisdom to guide each person to a transformational understanding of themselves and others. You can find Cynthia on the web at CynthiaHyatt.com and on social media under Cynthia Hyatt Inc. for current events, updates, and inspiration during your week. And now, here's Cynthia.
Well, thank you for joining me today. This is Cynthia Hyatt with Conversations with Cynthia. And I'm always thankful that you are listening, and I'm always praying that it will be inspiring and encouraging for you during this week. So I want to remind you before we start, always make sure that you check out my website at CynthiaHyatt.com. That's CynthiaHyatt.com. And there are other podcasts that I do on the radio station here locally in Arizona, and that's 1360 Faith Talk KPXQ. Also, my Facebook page at Cynthia Hyatt, Inc., that's INC for Incorporated, has lots of great devotionals and inspirational things that I think you'll really enjoy. And we enjoy putting that together for you as well. So always, if you have any suggestions or ideas, if you have any thoughts about a radio show that you would like to hear or a topic you'd like me to do, I would love it if you would just shoot me an email. You can post it on Facebook as well. You can message me on Facebook. So we're going to start today, and this show is entitled, I Am Always With You. And I love that the Lord tells us that in Matthew 28:20. And this is the Message Bible where Jesus says, God authorized and commanded me to commission you. Go out and train everyone you meet far and near in this way of life, marking them by baptism in the threefold name, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Then instruct them in the practice of all I have commanded you. I'll be with you as you do this, day after day after day, right up to the end of the age. And in the NIV Bible, it says, and teaching them to obey everything I commanded you, and surely I am with you always to the very end of the age. And so it's really important that we understand that God is always with us, even if we can't feel him or experience him or see him or hear him, that our belief is that he tells us that he is with us to the end of the age. And when he lives inside of us, we know that, wow, he is in me. He is with me all the time, day after day after day. And when we combine this with this beautiful verse in John 14:27, where it says, peace I leave with you, my peace I give to you. I do not give to you as the world gives. Do not let your heart be troubled, and do not be afraid. And what was so powerful is that if we look at this verse in John 14:27 in the Voice, that version, it says, my peace is the legacy I leave to you. I don't give gifts like those of this world. Do not let your heart be troubled or fearful. It says, my peace is the legacy. This is the legacy of Jesus, is his peace. And what's amazing is in the Message Bible, it says, I'm telling you these things while I'm still living with you. The friend, the Holy Spirit, whom the Father will send at my request, will make everything plain to you. He will remind you of all the things I have told you. I'm leaving you well and whole. That's my parting gift to you, peace. That's my parting gift to you, is my peace. I don't leave you the way you're used to being left, feeling abandoned and bereft. So don't be upset, don't be distraught. So he's saying that his peace is the legacy he's leaving with you, and it is the last thing that Jesus gave. He says, this is my parting gift. And so it's amazing when he tells us that my gift is the last thing I give to you. It's the embodiment of who I am. It's my legacy. And he says, prior in this show, we talked about when he said that he's telling us to go and do the Great Commission, that he's going to be with us every day, all day, day after day after day. So he's saying that peace is God's parting gift, so that the more peace we have, the more we can do the Great Commission. And that while we're doing that Great Commission, while we are doing the calling that God has on our life, he's telling us, I will be with you always. And my peace will be with you always. I think it's amazing to really consider this, that when we have peace, when we have his peace, we can really be what he created us to be. We have full access to ourselves and can think logically, rationally, as well as creatively, versus using our thinking and our creativity for just survival. See, having the feeling of peace allows us to thrive. So Jesus accomplished so much because he was at peace with himself and his Creator. He had peace. He was the embodiment of peace. And so he was able to do the calling on his life without wavering. He also had amazing amounts of energy because his energy wasn't being used to fight or defend himself. And we're talking about even physically, but also psychologically, emotionally. So when we think about the creations and the inventions and discoveries that have occurred when countries are relatively at peace versus what countries at war or fighting amongst themselves, what they have created or discovered when they're fighting and warring with other nations. See, when all of our creativity goes into defending, surviving, and fighting, we create very different things, and we walk out very different things. So peace is an amazing state of being, and consequentially, it becomes a feeling. So when we have God's peace, the peace of Jesus, his legacy, we then feel in a state of peace, and it becomes our feeling as well. So we get the state of peace because that's how Jesus lives, and we then actually have that become our own feeling. So the implications are huge for this. When we look at this as being a parting gift, and when we think about the design of humans, of mammals, how magnificent they are when they are at peace, how beautiful the world works when it's at peace. I mean, that's really what the Garden of Eden was about. So when we see that peace is God's parting gift to us, it's not love, it's not faith, but peace. Because what peace does, peace is the foundation, it's the bedrock, it's like the life soil of all those wonderful gifts, those other gifts like peace, love, joy, you know, love and joy and all those different types of things that God gives us when people are at peace. And so it's more difficult to love people when you're not at peace with them. It's more difficult to be creative when you're not at peace. It's more difficult to have faith and belief in who God is and who he says he is and who he thinks you are when you don't have peace. So Christ left this legacy of peace for us. This is the culmination of everything. So when we look at this idea that worry and peace, worry, angst, anger, frustration, cannot coexist with peace. We get the personality of Jesus. Jesus is saying, this is my Father's legacy, it's peace. Because why? Why would this be? See, God designed our brains to only process either worry or peace. What we've discovered, what neuroscientists have discovered, which is phenomenal, is the human brain is like an on and off switch. So it can't focus on both a positive and a negative feeling at the same time. It can only do one or the other. This was a huge discovery because as a result, they also discovered that the brain will always pick the negative before the positive. And this is probably seen because it's an unconscious survival mechanism because our brains are always trying to help us avoid pain. So as a result, we're always going to focus on the problem rather than on the solution as a way to change it and protect ourselves against the problem of pain. The only problem with this is whenever we think on the negative, we become compromised, we become more vulnerable, we become more exhausted, and we therefore have more pain. So this quite simply means the more I worry about things, people, and situations, the more anxious I become, the more my mind finds to worry about. So I'm going to give you this great metaphor that really helps me when we think about how the brain really works. I want you to think about the GPS in your car. So when you're telling your GPS what you need, you don't tell it where not to go. You tell it the positive, where to go. So it's the same thing with your brain. See, I'm going to give you an example. If I don't like exercising, then one of the ways I elicit the help of my brain is I tell myself positive things. So instead of saying, oh, I hate working out, I hate doing stomach crunches, that will probably help me to find a whole bunch of new ways to avoid doing it. And it will probably help me procrastinate. Whereas if I say to myself, I need to exercise, I really like how flat my stomach is if I do stomach crunches. Or I like the stamina I feel if I'm willing to do my running. Or I like how much better I feel about my health when I exercise. That's what I tell myself. Those are the things I tell myself in order to help me get to the place of actually exercising. Because if I tell myself all the reasons I don't want to do it, my brain helps me not to do it. Because it's wanting to help me avoid pain. So we all know this famous verse about in Proverbs 23:7 says, for as a man thinketh within, so he is. Well, this simply means the more I worry about things and people and situations, again, the more anxious that I'm going to become and the more reasons I find to not like whatever it is that I probably need to be doing. So I want you to listen to what this medical doctor says about worry. He says, it's like sand in the machinery of life. And he's saying that when they are conquering physical disease, they realize that they are conquering much of the problems of physical disease, but they're losing the battle on the mental and spiritual side. And he says, we know almost everything about life except how to live it. I mean, that's a very powerful statement. There's another doctor that I found, he says, when I find a purely physical cause of disease, I begin to feel like a doctor again. Because, you see, the British Medical Association claims that 60 to 80% of physical problems are rooted in our thinking. And a heart specialist says it's not so much our arteries that are the problem as our attitudes. Because, see, the effect of worry on the body is well known to all who are involved in treating physical problems. They say worry takes its toll on the physical system, and there's no organ that's immune to worry. No organ is immune to worry. So it's really powerful when you recognize that what happens to the brain when we are thinking negatively, when we are resisting the peace of Jesus. And I don't mean actively resisting. I mean that we are not seeking, acquiring, and doing what our part is to feel the peace of Jesus. So what this tells us is that it's not easy. It's discipline, and we need to take captive all of our thoughts. And so what we use, what practitioners of the mind, those of us, we call this the positivity ratio. Because it's more than just positive thinking. Positive thinking many times is about thinking what you're dreaming about, what your fairy tales are, what your fantasies are. And I'm not against having, you know, being able to enjoy some vision setting. But positive thinking has a lot to do with thinking on the positives of your current situation. So if I need to go to the doctor because I'm worried about something being wrong with me, instead of stressing about, oh my gosh, what is he going to tell me, what I'm going to say to myself is I'm so thankful that I have a doctor I can go to. I'm so thankful that I have the ability to drive. I'm so thankful that they're coming up with new things to fight whatever the problem is. Or I'm so thankful that God is with me in the midst of this and he knows my body better than I do or better than any doctor does. So I purposefully think on the positive. It's not that I'm being unrealistic. It's not like I'm being in la-la land. It means that I learn how to talk true reality and truth about a problem in a positive manner. Because what we do know about the truth is the truth sets us free. So when I have clients in my office, I talk very frankly about the truth of their condition or their behaviors or what it may lead to or what has happened to them. And in doing that, I still am talking positively about the fact that they can recover, that God has great things for them, that God has a calling on their life, that there are ways that God can turn a bad thing into good things that come from it, not making the bad thing good. And so we can talk about the positivity of the situation in terms of the health that they're going to achieve. Excuse me. The things they do have to look forward to, the ways that God is going to do this, and still accept the reality of how dire maybe a situation may be or how painful it may be. And so it's very important, because what we have to understand is that if we don't maintain the highest level of positivity, we're not going to counteract the effects of negativity on our bodies, our spirits, our souls, our relationships. And what doctors have found is when they, just by taking a picture of your brain through MRIs and we do brain mapping, that we see that neural changes in the brain happen within 1 second of thinking a negative thought. I mean, think about this. You think a negative thought, and in less than a second, the amygdala, which is in the right side of your brain, that's where the fight, flight, or freeze situation occurs. That's the sympathetic nervous system. Within less than a second, the amygdala releases dozens upon dozens of stress-producing hormones and neurotransmitters. And these brain chemicals immediately interrupt normal functioning of the brain, especially those involved with logic, reason, and problem-solving. So negative thinking, what you will get is a wash of stress, hormones, and neurotransmitters, all that activity. And so worry and thinking on negative things puts you in survival mode. And so the more you stay focused on worry and thoughts, the more you actually damage key structures that regulate memory, feelings, and emotions. And you might disrupt your sleep, your appetite, all kinds of things that your brain needs to have in order to regulate happiness, longevity, and health. So what we're understanding is that God really knows what he's talking about. God has said, I made you, I created you. This will compromise you and kill you. So when we think about how Jesus talked and thought, we see how much of this he practiced. But he didn't ever minimize anything, and he didn't lie, and he didn't try to pretend like bad things weren't happening. But he was very adept at positioning himself in a positive manner as to the calling that God had on his life and his willingness to walk it out and what it was going to achieve for humankind. So we begin to understand that we actually have a relationship with our brain and that I can communicate with my brain. And I know that sounds strange, but I want you to remind yourself as Christians that we know that brains don't float to heaven. Okay? Our brain is an organ like any other organ of the body. Because people can still be alive if their brain is dead. So they cannot have consciousness, not be aware that they're alive and their body is still working. As long as the brain stem is active. So what that tells us is that our brain is what helps us express our mind, our spirit, our soul. Whatever words you choose to say is the consciousness of a human being. So we can tell our brain what to think. I can tell my brain what I want it to do. I can say, this is the problem that I need to solve. And when I talk to people that have had extreme burnout, have been survivors of cancer and have what we call chemo brain, these types of things, or just the general population, the better relationship you have with your brain, which is positive thinking, the better your brain works for you. It's like the difference between me just letting my computer tell me what to think and me being in charge of my computer and having my computer work for me. So there are many things that are imperative that we work on when we are saying, okay, God, I want to have that peace. I want the peace that passes all understanding. Because the other element here when we're talking about the brain is when we think about words like peace, love, joy, those are very abstract words. And we talk about the importance of words. And God understands the importance of words because he says in John 1:1, he is the Word. And the Word was first, the Word was present, and God present to the Word was God, in readiness for God from day one. So words were working with God from day one, and that was Jesus. Jesus is the Word. And one of the words that Jesus is peace. And so we have this amazing part of our brain called the thalamus. It's like a little walnut-shaped heart of our brain, and it's in the very center of our brain. It's in the command center, and it takes words and disseminates it through the rest of the brain. So it takes a word like peace, love, and joy, and it tells the rest of the brain to feel that or to think on that. So when I think about peace, it washes over the rest of my brain. This is why the amygdala calms down. Sympathetic nervous system calms down when I choose to think more positively, more hopefully. When I think negatively, like, let's talk about what happens if you go into a situation and you start thinking about rejection and you think, oh, people think I'm a weirdo, they don't like me, they're not going to get me, they wish I weren't here, I made too many mistakes, they don't know me, I don't belong. Well, all of a sudden, within less than a second, you start thinking about rejection, your entire brain gears up to deal with rejection, which usually means you are now on the defensive, you are now protective. You now cannot be relaxed because you have no peace. You're not at peace. And so you are going to act in a way that is probably less of who you are. So we're going to get an aberration of you. We're going to get a part of you or a version of you that is not really authentic to you because you're going to be. So I want you to think about why Jesus was able to make such good decisions and never be anxious. See, he was at peace. Jesus never worried about money. Judas was the one that worried about money. Jesus really was in charge of how he thought. And so I'm going to give you, we're going to kind of take a minute here, and I'm going to give you this analogy that really works for me that I just kind of experienced. Because having Jesus in you means that you get to have his feelings. It's not just knowing it cognitively. He wants you to feel how he actually feels. Just like you wish you could have someone feel the way you feel. You know, we all know what we mean when we say, I feel angry, I feel upset, I feel hurt, I feel rejected, I feel so peaceful right now, I feel intense joy, I feel excited or happy. We know what those words mean, but we don't necessarily know what that feels like for that person. So you have your happy feeling and I have my happy feeling. And you have your feeling of hurt and I have my feeling of hurt. And physically, how many times have you wished someone knew what it felt like so that they would maybe have the appropriate amount of sympathy or compassion on you? So what we have to understand is if Jesus lives in us, then we actually get to feel his feelings. He didn't say, I'm going to help you feel peaceful. He said, I give you my peace. So we get to actually feel the way Jesus feels. And then it also then becomes my way of feeling. So this idea of Jesus saying, my peace I give to you, and I will be with you always. That's an amazing statement. And I got a great word picture when I went to the San Diego Zoo just recently. I didn't know this about the zoo, but they had this thing called a backstage pass, and my husband signed us up for it because he knows I love animals and I would own a zoo if I was so allowed to. And so there's this, what they do in this backstage pass is you get to go into this outside little theater that doesn't hold very many people. There was maybe 20 people while we were there. And you get to be up close and really see the wild animals. So I got to see a sloth. I got to see a serval. Clouded leopard, which are very rare, this amazing Alaskan wolf dog. His paws were larger than my hands. He was this beautiful white wolf. And the last thing we got to see was a cheetah. I mean, a full-grown cheetah. These cats are huge, and they are so beautiful, and they are so skittish, so fear-based, so hypervigilant. And so what they do with cheetahs, and I saw a show on this on Animal Planet and on the National Geographic Planet as well, is one of the ways they're helping to make sure that cheetahs do not become completely extinct is as they breed them or when they are rescuing them, they place them with a dog buddy. So many of the baby cheetahs are paired up with a puppy at the very beginning. And they have these dog buddies that go with them everywhere, sleep with them, eat with them, play with them, travel with them. So as they bring this cheetah out onto the stage, which we're kind of a part of, we're so close, we're like 8 feet away from this cheetah, that there's this dog, this cute dog, he's kind of a probably a Labrador mix, that comes with him. And you see the cheetah with a, you know, a collar on his neck, on a leash, which is amazing. If you ever know anything about cats, we can't even get domestic cats barely to do that. And the dog has a collar and a leash. And so what you see through the whole presentation is you see this beautiful cheetah being willing to walk around, stand and pose, jump, do all these amazing things, because every now and then, every couple, maybe 10 seconds, he'd glance over at the dog. He'd glance at his dog buddy. And what the dog was there for was to make sure that the cheetah could be at rest, could be at peace. Because the cheetah knew if the dog was okay, then he would be okay. So as long as he was around the dog and the dog was okay, the cheetah was okay. Which is this wonderful thing that you recognize with Jesus, that Jesus is with me all the time. And I want to borrow feelings from Jesus. I want to get my cues from Jesus. That if Jesus is okay, I can be okay. And he's with me always. And he gives me peace and lets me be at peace and not have to be hypervigilant and on guard all the time and constantly checking and stressing and not being able to be present. But this magnificent cheetah was completely calm and relaxed in the midst of all these humans. I mean, this was a very wild animal. He was not, you don't domesticate cheetahs. So he was certainly aware, but he wasn't guarded. And so he was relaxed in the midst of all this cacophony of humans and airplanes flying by and people doing different things because his dog buddy was right with him. So we can gather that from this understanding of the way God has made mammals, that we have this part of our brain that goes on to high alert. And how do we find peace? How do we relax? How do we stay calm so we can actually do what God has called us to do? And that means that not only do we borrow feelings from Jesus, but that we actually feel what Jesus feels and allow ourselves to feel that. So God understands this issue of trust. When we talked about these words like trust and peace and joy and love, these abstract positive words. Well, when I think about the word trust, I have to tell you, I'll tell you the truth. I understand trust until I actually have to do it. And God understands that. He knows how hard it is, and he knows all about trust. It's hard to experience the peace of God if I'm not trusting. This cheetah trusts this dog buddy. So I need to trust who died for me. My trust always starts with God and stops with God, not with me. I need to remember that I can't trust me like I can trust God. So I really give myself permission to trust, because trusting allows me to experience peace and how precious that is. So we work on repenting from our worry and our warring with ourself and with the world. And there's this famous Jesus, the book Jesus Calling, which I like. It encourages us to relax in his healing holy presence, that we allow him to transform us through our time alone with him, that we center our thoughts more and more on Jesus, and that trust displaces fear and worry, gives us peace. So I'm going to end this with my favorite prayer, and this is the prayer of St. Teresa of Avila. She says, "Let nothing disturb you. Let nothing frighten you. All things pass. God does not change. Patience achieves everything. And whoever has God lacks nothing. God alone is enough." Enjoy your week. Be at peace. And peace be with you. And I will talk to you next week.